Good morning, brothers and sisters. I'm really thrilled to be here. And for me, this is a great privilege to be associated with this week. My name is Louis Dorvidier. I'm a guy which is really blessed beyond measure. Grew up in the southwest part of the island of Haiti, in a poor family. Even though my mom.
Can you use some first? Yeah, two mics.
The kids are loud there too.
Make sure this is loud.
You want to use this for this session?
Yes.
Yep, let me go find out.
Yeah, I was saying that I'm really blessed beyond measure. Grew up in the southwest part of the island of Haiti, little place called Jeremy, you know, from here, on the coffee plantation. Even though my mom would disagree with me saying that we were poor because we had to eat every day. So if you have to eat every day in Haiti, you are not poor. So, but nothing, you know, in my own upbringing would really prepare me to be here with you. I grew up around the Vodou culture. I grew up in a strong Catholic faith where I will go into that during this session. But nothing really prepared me to be here. Only God grace, you know, have allowed me to be here. One of the way that I always presenting myself is I'm Louis. And everybody call me Louis. I'm Louis, child of God. I'm here with my wife, Mitch, and my four children, Soaya. So Soaya here. And the boys are probably somewhere. Stephanie's here. Okay. Welcome to this session. I've been asked to talk about the Haitian culture. But I have to make a disclaimer. I'm not an anthropologist. I don't have any background in social sciences, anything like that. I happen to be Haitian. I love the country. And above all, I cannot say no to Renee when she asks for something.
Who can
So, just very briefly, you know, Edward Glisson is one of the Martinican writer who recently died, and he really gave us a good definition from his own perspective on cultural métissage as the mixture of the island of Martinique. And he says that, you know, culture is a powerful human tool for survival. And culture has been really used in the Haitian culture, you know, throughout history as a really resilient tool, really, for not only survival, but also for their own existence in the country. And today, I will be leaving some part of the Haitian culture in this presentation because we have only about 40 minutes to cover 525 years of Haitian culture. So, and also I know some of our colleagues will cover part of the Vodou culture and so on. I will not get into the Vodou culture also today. But I will walk you through the Haitian belief, some of the Haitian art, some custom in the country, and let you understand, you know, what is going on right now and use some crazy and poetic aspect of the Haitian culture and music. So that's what we will touch today and we'll learn today. But I cannot start this session really without remembering Ben. And I have to say very clearly here, I didn't know Ben. I met Ben, what I call by divine conspiracy, in Nebraska, Lincoln, Nebraska, for a global mission, global event. I've heard about Renee and Ben and their many trips to Haiti. And Raphael once mentioned Renee also to me. And I was just there. I didn't plan to be in Nebraska. There's another one called Sunita Mota. This is another one that you cannot say no to. So he said, Louis, you have to go to one of the local events. And I happened not to have time, really. And I didn't have that on my agenda, on my schedule. I didn't have any budget for it. And Sunita said, you have to go. I'll pay for it. I'll put it in my budget, but you have to go. So that's where I've met Renee and John in Nebraska. But I'm still, you know, angry at Ben, because when we met that night, we talked a little bit and so on, and we were supposed to meet the next day. And he didn't show up. And I told Renee, you know, what happened to Ben? Ben has a rash or something and couldn't come to the breakfast that we were planning to have a breakfast meeting together. But today I would like really, through this poem of Felix Maurice Olowoa, really render a good tribute to Ben and who he was and his ministry and so on in, within the church. And that's also part of the Haitian culture. We just bury our loved one. We celebrate our loved one. And Maurice, through this poem, said, when I die, make me a beautiful wake. I'm going neither to paradise nor hell. Don't be scared of talking Latin to my head. When I die, bury me in the yard. Gather all my friends, make a big feast. Don't go past the church with my cups. When I die, everyone should really get it on. Laugh, sing, dance, tell jokes. Don't be sappy. Yell into my ear. I want all to get a big done when I'm dead. All the places where there were great bashes, where people were free, they'll remember me. And that's what we are doing this week, remembering Ben, but also all those who departed from the Haitian earthquake. And for me, this poem really embodied who I understood, who I understand Ben, you know, was and is still to us. And for that, we are gathered as friends today to celebrate, to share into, and to understand what is Haiti and today. And I'm just to the music here.
Sorry.
Go ahead. This is a music from Mano Shamai, who who is one of the Haitian deacons, really.
À condition qu'on peut couler, dégager jusqu'à ce qu'elle faisait. Quand on dit bébé, nous en vaisseau, la table chante et coquille au beau, si veillant va tourner les dos, bête cap rempli par le fait zéro. L'amitié loin, l'amitié près, rendait toujours à discuter. À patience, on les faut oublier. Cérémonie fait commencer une des trois quatre qui restait là. Est-ce que c'est ou est-ce que c'est moins quand même faut que la dernière verra. Babouquet comme ancien modèle vivi d'un crié pour un seul. Qui ça la couvre et qui a sauté, c'est toujours à recommencer. Au contraire, n'a pas motivé pour nous essayer un scène d'apprendre, c'est tourner sans poil, sans pour qui elle fait bien des migrés, n'a rien. Sans migrés, m'bral, kai, sans migrés. Yo dis, sans migrés, c'est l'agent serré. Mais sans migrés, c'est les couteaux des corps, m'bral, ouais, si c'est. Zami bre mbal kay zami loin, yo di
This is a music from Mano Shanmai, which is one of the beacon of the Haitian one writer, musician, and troubadour, who is calling us as friend, because we are friends coming from different parts of the nation here in the US, different part of the world. But friends, you have close friends, but we have also friends that are far away. And he said that friends that are far away, they are investment, you know? They are like something that you put aside for the rainy day, you know? And it's a challenge to maintain that, because friends that are close by to you sometimes, you know, they are kind of a knife with a double feel, you know? And how you handle them, you know, is the entire art, you know, of keeping friendship with people. But to those who are really far, far away, it costs you really to keep that friendship. It costs you a lot to maintain that relationship. So we are here as friends to celebrate and remember Ben and remember those, you know, who departed from Haiti. But also, that means we'll also have an effort to make, you know, to keep that friendship and to nurture that friendship. I have a couple of picture trivia for you. Some of you probably have been to these places in Haiti, or in others, you know, probably don't have a clue. So, what would you say, you know, where this picture? Because I've traveled all over the world. That is why I said I'm blessed beyond measures, really. I've traveled to many places in Africa, in Latin America, Australia, and so on. So, and one of my hobbies is taking pictures. So that's the reason why it makes it a little bit tricky for those who know me, you know, for them to know where these pictures, you know, were taken. What would you say?
Which one is Haiti?
Which one is Haiti?
Oh, there's an Haitian song. There's an Haitian.
Yeah. So this picture on our right is the cottages in Fort de Paix. It's where during the first American occupation from the 1915, that's where they settled in the Haitian forest, and what they do, they were saying that they were doing the harvesting, you know, of the forest during that time, and bringing stuff to the nation. Yeah. What about this one? Both of them? What would you say? Both? Yeah. But there is a particularity, yeah, they are both, you're right, both from Haiti. There is a particularity in this picture. This is a picture that I took in one of the marketplaces in Haiti. But you would see how people are dressed to go to the marketplace. A certain pride in handling themselves and so on. Go ahead. And here? Yeah, go ahead.
Both?
No, this picture on the left was taken in Liberia. It was taken in Liberia, in Monrovia, actually, which is really resemble Port-au-Prince, really, before the quake. And this one was taken at a small little resort on the northern side of Haiti. And here?
Don't be shy, woman. You have a voice. Go ahead.
The right. The left in Haiti?
The right.
The right?
Now they have kind of questions about you.
The left picture was taken in Ethiopia. The white one is one of my favorite beaches in Haiti. There is no infrastructure there. but it's one of the coolest place, I would say, you know, on the island. So, as I said, you know, that's what we will be exploring, a little bit of history, the poem and music and art, and we'll talk a little bit about the food of the island. Go ahead. So, what's Haiti, really, you know? One of the laughing, you know, presentation of Haiti was made by Patrick de la Tour, a great friend who is the actual Minister of Tourism in Haiti. And during one of his interviews to Condé Nast, traveler, he said that Haiti has been a problematic destination since 1791, you know? And if you want to know what happened in 1791, you have to come back tomorrow. Okay, I'll make a presentation about the Haitian history. And he said, jokingly, that after the revolution, that 500,000 Negroes was running naked in the woods and claiming themselves to be free, you know? That's an illusion, you know, that we've been living, you know, from since 1792. And because the thing behind that, what De La Tour is saying is, after the independence of Haiti, few people really visited the island. Only anthropologists, those who are curious about history, who was nuts about crazy and music and so on, those people visited Haiti. And curiously, they are the ones who are still coming back over and over in Haiti, you know? Because Haiti is really not well known by the outside world. I mean, what we saw is what we saw on our TV, on CNN, and when something happened, that's what we know and saw about Haiti. But Amy Willens put it that way, and I love this definition. He says that Haiti is a love song. It's a Haitian love song, played on three drums and an electric guitar that never sound quite on key. You know? But he says, you know, there is no question that you can still dance on it. So it's a really interesting book also that I recommend. When it sees on Haiti Then and Now by Amy Willens. So the other particularity of also Haiti is it's a place that, you know, you love it or you leave it. There is no middle ground on it. It's you, you know, plunge deep, headlong, or nothing else. This is a place where tipping toe is not allowed. That's the country, you know? You cannot dip, you know, and go back. It's headlong. So that's what also Christopher Columbus might have discovered, you know, in this place. You dive headlong in Haiti. So that's where people keep coming back, you know? And I said to people, you know, you're nuts, you know? This country, you can just go cross the border and go to the DR. You have the infrastructure, water, you know, road, and so on. Why are you coming back to Haiti, you know? And that's where it's interesting for you to read Amy Willens. And she said, you know, this grip you, take you by the gut, and so on. But one of the other thing also of Haiti is the insularity of the island. So that means it's take time for Haitian, really, to trust foreigners, you know? That has been the history, and we'll touch that tomorrow as well. In 1492, Columbus arrived on the island, was received by the Taino Indian with open arms, you know? Plant the cross, and we have a huge legacy as Christian also in Haiti, you know. Plant the cross, you know, and kill 500,000 Indians that were on the island, you know. When he arrived, 500,000. And at the end of the expedition, you know, they were all gone. 52 of them were rescued by Father Las Casas and brought them to the other side of the western side of the island. So it's a tremendous legacy for us Christian also. So that makes it really very difficult for Haitian. But if you are patient, you know, if you want really to really dive headlong, you will be accepted. And that's what Amy says, you know. Haiti drives you crazy with love, with anxiety, with desire, you know. And you believe that when you see these white sand beaches and so on, you believe that Haiti was waiting for you, you know. Haiti was not, really. Yeah, and that's the country. I mean, that tribe, you know, is like, you know, this, what we call this unrequited love, you know. The way the country, the way people are pushing you, you know, and that make you really interested to come back, make you crazy, you know, and the place, you know, attract you. But one of the way that C.L.R. James put it, this writer from Barbados, and he explained that very clearly, that the transformation of the slave, really, it's something unparalleled in human history. The slaves that were trembling and not really being able to even raise their head because they talked to the masters that way, you know? And for them to rise up and create one of the great revolutionary struggles, you know, in human history, is quite an achievement. And this achievement also is a burden for Haitian. It's a burden that we carry, and we'll see that also in the Haitian history, that it's very difficult for Haitian to carry that, you know? We live with pride, we live with this eccentric history, you know? We believe that we have the most beautiful beaches, you know, on all the entire islands in the Caribbean. We believe that we have the best food, you know, of all the islands because we have a tri-cultural history, you know, which is African, which is French, which is Caribbean, you know. So we believe that we have something unique, you know, and that makes it very difficult for us. And you can see that, and I invite you when you go to Haiti to go to La Coquille, a small little restaurant in the middle of Pétionville that survived the earthquake. And when you go to La Coquille, you know, you said, you know, it's too much. Next time, Mitch, you can see that. You know? La Coquille is too much, you know. It's eccentric. The colors, the way it's being decorated. It's not only the food, but it's also all the ritual around the food, you know, and that make it really appealing and attractive also. So you see how the place is decorated. So there is some real pride in around that. Yeah, thanks. And the thing that I was talking about, the food, you know, you have a way, and the good example really is to see that at La Coquille. The way food you know, is being displayed. The rice being, you know, Rafael is not here. With chaka and conch and beans, you know, poulet creole, what they call poisson bocelle, the fish with onion and herbs and so on. So these are really unique food that you find in the Caribbean. You find them elsewhere, but they are prepared differently, you know, in Haiti. So and that make you, you know, make it different. And we talk about the plantain and the pickles and so on. So that was what I was talking about. Haiti is the Cleopatra of countries. It's really unparalleled destination, you know. The art, it's singular. Mitch will be talking about a little bit about the Haitian art when she talked about the voodoo. In the Vodou culture, and you will see that the painting of Saint Soleil, the color in the painting, you know, and the different expression of the art in Haiti, the gingerbread houses, you know, you have few of these that remain. You have to travel up north, 300 miles up north, to see the remnant of the colonial era in Cape Haitian. And the war occupation. But Olofsson is a good place for you to start to see, you know, the culture and the culture of Papa Zaka, which is welcoming you, the peasant association, the different art and culture of the country. And you can see the color. The color is really vivid, and that's make this naive painting, you know, the influence of the African art. You can see that, you know, for those who've been to Africa. And the color, you know, it's really the red is very present, you know. It's the fight, it's the struggle of the Haitian, you know, that you see and the expression in the Haitian art that you can see, which is really, really, really present. So this is one of my hobbies, also collecting arts and collecting art pieces, you know, of Haiti. But from what we are seeing with Haiti is from the art, the music, the cultural expression, dance, and so on. But Haiti is a really barely, it's an unknown place, as Wyclef Jean put it, you know. Nobody knows Haiti yet, you know, and all that the country has to offer as part of this cultural aspect of the nation, and we live with this history. We live with the cultural situation of the country. But I wanted just to share this as an introduction for us, really, to have time for us to have a real conversation, not making a lecture and teaching you about stuff. But I wanted just to make the introduction that open the floor for us to have a real conversation about Haitian. About Haiti and the Haitian culture, you know. But the music is really, really, really present, and you have that throughout the Haitian history, how music is being used as an instrument. Mano used it, and others as well. I've asked Mano to come and join me here, but unfortunately couldn't make it. But he says, you know, if we do it next time, let me know in advance, and I'll join. But this is the kind of stuff that you have in Haiti, and I'm inviting you into the conversation for us to really delve into that. You know, why the question is why Haiti is not known outside. You know, the question is, you know, how do we what would be our responsibility really to show what I call the tale, but also the face of Haiti. You know, and how do we share that? And the different type of expression that you find in the Haitian art. So let me open the conversation and the floor for you to comment. I know also many of you have been to Haiti. If you have things to add and things to share, your personal story also about Haiti, that would be great. Okay, so let me stop here with the presentation so that we have time. But you can go with background pictures. Slideshow.
I'm sorry, I wasn't trained for that.
Job training.
Yeah. Who wants to start?
Wait, I have a question. I can't help but notice that Haiti shares an island with the Dominican Republic. What's the relationship between those two nations?
Good question. It's a love and hate relationship. It's a tear and joy relationship. I can share my own personal story with you. After the earthquake, a week after the earthquake, I believe, I was in South Africa. That's where the earthquake took me, and traveling to Haiti. Long story short, I arrived in the Dominican Republic, and I've seen a lot of Dominican, you know, immigration officers that was at the door of the plane and say, "Haitian on this side." And I said, "Here we go again." That's what I said. But fortunately, Dominican were there to receive all the Haitian, you know, to help us through custom, to let us know that we are welcome, and they are there to help us, you know, to across Santo Domingo and to arrive to Haiti. And I had really to write a letter to the foreign minister myself, you know, to say thank you, you know, for this. Because this has been the relationship between the two islands. You know, the massacres of Haitians, first the invasion of Dominican Republic on the other side, on the Boyer in 1825, you know. Dominican never get over this. You have the massacre of Haitians on the other side of the island by Balaguer during the 1925, you know. We never get over that, you know. And nobody really ever done anything to mediate, you know, the relationship between the two countries. So this is one of the things that we have in our NWRF program to the Norwegian government, trying to see if we can bring the two nations also together. It's a very painful relationship, still today.
Could you talk a little bit about the history of American intervention in Haiti? I know that's a long, long history, and I think it's very unknown to most Americans.
Yeah, I have that in the presentation for tomorrow, but we can watch that today. The first intervention of the American to the island in 1915 was what I call a benevolent intervention that has nothing to see with Haiti. But that was part of the context of the World War I, the place of Haiti in the Caribbean, the involvement of the German as part of the remnant of the Great War, and Wilson wanted to really protect the area. And the Haitian also at that time made the stupidity of entering, you know, the French ambassador's house to take back the Haitian president that took refuge to the ambassador's house. And Wilson said, if I didn't do anything, somebody would do something, and America to the American, I have to take my responsibilities and not let any other thing like this come up, because if that happened to the French, that might happen also to the American as well. So that was the context of the first American invasion in the country. So normally after the end of the war, the World War I, they were supposed to go out. But that's where the CACO movement started in terms of the resistance to the American occupation. A group of mulattoes, you know, to preserve their self-interest, because when the American arrived in the island, they did one of the mistakes, you know, that they were not supposed to be doing. They reestablished what we call the colonial era pattern. You know, the Haitian club, the American clubs, the club of the officers, and this club, curiously, were off-limit to the mulattoes. You know, and that's why, one of the reasons, they says, you know, oh, we are losing our own privilege in our own nation, and we fought for that, you know, and so on. And that the reason why the mulattoes took the arm in the central part of the plateau and created the CACO movement, and they were joined by others, you know. That was the first American occupation. And because of the CACO movement, the American occupation lasted, you know, more than 15 years. That was the first. The second American invasion was what I call the invasion on demand. That's what Philippe Girard called in his book.
Can I stop you here?
You give too much information.
Yeah, no, we can finish that. The second American invasion, you know, came in 2004. I received with the Lavalas movement, took power, blood support, 80% of the population supported him. But I received was a liberation theologian, a Marxist, you know, and what he was saying, you know, did not go well with the army, and he was ousted by the power by the army, and he fled to the U.S. So under the Clinton administration, so he was brought back to the country, and so on. So, and even with the U.S., let's say, with both U.S. and France, because you cannot talk about that without mentioning France, it has always been a very difficult situation. Even if Haitian inside, the intellectuals and so on, the writers and all this cream of the cream in Haiti, they would be the first to write something about the occupant, you know, and so on. Even though we are all looking at our studies and education in France, in the US, and so on, but it's still there. The resentment and those kind of relationship has been always been. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. In our small community of Moscow, I'm hoping you can help me. There is a small island somewhere off of Haiti where some of our agronomists are going in and helping with replanting trees. And I think the economy base years ago used to be that it used to be very well forested, and they burned the trees to make coal. Charcoal. And so when the earthquake happened, a lot of Haitians went to this small island, but now it's very difficult for them to make a living there because there are not the trees. And I'm wondering if you know the name of the island. Have you heard of that?
It's probably Lagunav.
Lagunav. I think that might be it.
It's probably Lagunav. I mean, because we have three small islands in Haiti. One is Lagunav, where you have, see, probably good settlement. You know, it is estimated that 500,000 people are living on this place. And it's still there.
Okay.
People are working and helping.
I just could not remember the name of it, but it sounds like you know, a lot of work is needed to do replanting the forest. If that's the same.
Yeah, this has been, you know, I mean, that's what I called in the presentation, you know. And sometimes people are asking culturally, planting tree has been part of the Haitian hallmark, right? When you grew up as a kid, they cut your umbilical cord, you know, and your parents have to save that. And when you become, let's say, 6 or 10, between 6 and 10 years old, you have to pick up the tree. You choose your own tree. And that's where you plant your umbilical cord, you know? But that was one way to encourage kids, really, to protect tree, to, you know, nurse them, and so on. That has been part of the island. But what happened during the various occupations that we have in the country, and the last one was what I mentioned, the 1914, and one of the cottages that we saw on one of the pictures. That's where they established what they call the Shada Company, which was, and that was the first time that the American and the Canadian, you know, probably agreed on something, and they established the Shada Company there with the majority shareholders of the American, and to harvest the forest, you know? And now the forest, when they arrived, was 60,000 acres, you know, before the occupation and so on. And most of the trees for Louisiana and around Georgia and so on, you know, were taken from the chart area, you know. And after the occupation, so there is nobody to take care of that, people start planting and taking lands and so on, and they continue the same thing today.
So with a bunch of foreign NGOs in there, French, Canadian, American, have they had any influence on Haitian culture, music, art, or has it mostly been the other way?
It's a very interesting question because not much, really. If you compare the Haitian occupation with the Dominican occupation on the other side of the island, you know, and the Americans stayed more longer in Haiti than they did in Dominican Republic. In DR, you have baseball, you have basketball, you know, and baseball is a huge thing in DR. But before the American occupation, there was no baseball in Dominican Republic. Because the culture on the other side of the island, you know, was the Taino culture. You know, I mean, there was no baseball in the Taino culture. But strangely enough, and because of the resistance and the control of the mulatto classes during the resistance movement, you know, that used to finance sport and encourage sport and so on, who had the media and the propaganda and so on, you know, nothing is left. No baseball, no basketball, you know, not that much, you know, in the culture. And during that era arise what we call the movement of Saint Soleil, which is the what Mitch will show you during the voodoo, the art, the particular art that rise up during that period, you know, as an element of resistance of the Haitian culture to the American occupation.
So what sports do your children play? What do the children play? Do they have oral stories? Do they do art? Do they...
You like it or not? One thing that you first do in Haiti is playing soccer. You have a couple of socks, you put it in trash and pie or whatever it is, and you start playing soccer. You know, you might wait really a long, long, long time until you can see a real soccer ball. You know, and it's a great joy when you finally get, you know, a soccer ball. Yeah, that's what people do. But the art issue, strangely, art is not taught. I mean, now it's being taught in Haiti. But doing, for example, the time that when I grew up in Haiti, you grab, I don't call it a pencil or a pin brush and so on, and you start doing your thing, you know? You can look at, you know, what your neighbor or your friends, you know, are doing and so on. And all these artists, for example, I work, and that's one of the benevolent things that I do, even since I returned also in Haiti right now, is looking at the Haitian artists and what they are doing and how to promote them. And I'm always telling them, you know, this painting is not finished. And they will say, how do you know? And I said, because this line is not finished, you know? You have to go back and finish this line and those kind of stuff, you know? So I did that because I studied that and I'm interested in art and those kind of stuff. But this guy, they just take their brush and they start doing their stuff, you know? And some of them will learn, really, techniques, you know? Moving from the naive to all the impressionism and those kind of stuff, they will learn that later in their career. When they start doing exposition, they will travel to Paris and so on. So you will see many of the painters of the Saint-Soleil, even though this style has been there for more than 50, 60 years, the best painter of the Saint-Soleil will learn probably 45 years, 50 years, you know, doing their career after they've been painting for 40, 45 years. You know.
So is there a distinction between, are they learning more from a parent, a neighbor, a grandparent? Who has the time and who's spending that time in the culture with them?
Oh, I mean, that's what they do. I mean, for example, you have, and if you are interested in art, you will know where to go. For example, you have what they call the school of the Obas, but it's not a school. It's a little place where the guy has his, the chevalier, and he has his paintbrushes and those kind of his painting and so on. You would go at certain time, because you don't want to be on his way, because the guy could be grumpy. You know that you have to come at certain time during the day on the Oba, you know? We say, Père Oba, you know, Father Oba, will be painting today, you know his schedule. And you will show up at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. You will be there and watch, you know? And if the guy, you know, woke up, you know, on the right foot, he will say, what do you think? Now you know I am in, you know? You say, I am in, you know? The guy start asking you questions, so that means he has some interest in you. And we tell you, you know, can you retouch this? So that will be your day, you know? So that's how, you know, things is being transmitted to. The same thing about history, really. Most of the Haitian history have been really translated from generation to generation. In my own family, you would have, when we go on vacation, grandma will organize a tea or a chocolate or something like that, because we didn't have the we will gather around the tea, around grandma, who would tell us tales. But in that, you won't know what is true or what is not. You know, you probably will learn that later when you are in your secondary school and education and say, oh, grandma told me about that part, you know? So that's how.
Can I add something in terms of painting? I don't know if you've ever seen a transportation bus in Haiti picture. You see how colorful it is? Unfortunately, I don't have a, we call it tap-tap. A tap-tap means it's something that you, it's an express, but it's not really an express transportation, but we call it tap-tap. And then the tap-tap are very colorful. And this is a way that if you're interested in painting, and then there is a place where they do all the painting on the tap-tap, but those people are not being taught how to do it. It's an expression, you do it, and then you look all by yourself. And then if anybody else want to do it, and then you come, you said, I want to work with you, and then you start in the lower level, you know, you do the first layer of painting. So that's where, and then you can see all the tap-tap, it's the expression of our, first our culture, which is the painting and the colorful tap-tap, and also the creativity on the Haitian, on people in the island. So this is one of the thing about painting also. And then it can move on from you know, being a painter of a tap-tap, and then you can have a very well-known painter also. It's happened sometimes, but later on we said you will learn the techniques. But now we have some schools you can learn, but those are for kids who actually have money. People, you know, parents can pay for them. But the real thing happened not in school. It's on the street. It's in our neighborhood. This is where the real painters are. You know, that's the thing about culture and the painting in Haiti. And also, you talk about you ask a question about what about other culture? What happened also? We have in the Haitian culture also the dancing. I grew up dancing. I didn't go to a school to learn it. Actually, my mom taught me. And then for me, the thing that my mom taught me and the thing that when we go to school to learn it, it's two different things. And for me, the real Haitian culture dance is being taught at home by your parents, because my mom learned it from her mom, and then it was passing on to generation to generation. And then there's also story, the folk tales that we have, which is really, really enriched in our culture. And then, I don't know, I've been dancing since, I don't remember exactly when. I think it was since my mom was pregnant with me, so she was dancing. So, so I've learned it, it's because, you know, Haiti has so many things that make us what we are now. And then, you know, painting, dancing, you know, singing. That's why, because I grew up dancing, whenever I hear the drumming, as soon as I hear that, my body is still like moving. I'm like, wow. As you can see, I dance over everything, you know, everything, so.
One last thing before we come to a decision is, and you cannot talk about the Haitian culture, even though I know others will touch voodoo and so on, is the syncretism that you have also, where you go from and Ati Bovra is one of the great voodoo masters in here. He will tell you we have 80% Catholic, you know, we have whatever 15% Protestant.
10.
And we said you have 100% Vaudouism. You like it for that. It's how and Bookman experience really put it really great in his message at Guinée, you know. This is the spirit. We ask people to really, you know, live their life, but live it really fully. But also live the life, you know, as a Guinea, because this is a message of peace, you know, that the Guinea is bringing to the world and to the earth, you know. This is the message of this music from Book and Fish Pond Experience. About Haiti and so on, but I know that Philip is doing a couple of good sessions also that I would like you also to participate in that for you to understand the economic situation of Haiti and how this is important also for you to in this particular place and the role of the American government also in the economic development also of Haiti. So thank you to all of you for